Breaking news.
Breaking news.
It's the year of the chatbot.
The latest setback for climate action.
The latest Supreme Court, ruling.
In the latest Supreme Court ruling, the court is set to redefine. Hi there, and welcome to the Mission Forward podcast. I'm Carrie Fox, your host and CEO of Mission Partners, a social impact communications firm and certified B Corporation. Thanks for tuning in to today's episode. We are recording this episode just days after International Women's Day and Women's Equal Pay Day, and I've got equity on my mind. And good thing, because we've got just the guest to help share some new developments and insights for how equity is advancing in the workplaces all over the country, and how you can learn how to apply an equity lens to your growth, too. Now, I suspect this audience doesn't need much of a why when it comes to DEI, but I'll say it anyway. When done right, DEI initiatives and investments not only give companies a competitive edge, they can be the very means to mend our broken society. Today's guest knows firsthand the effect that DEI initiatives can have on organizational culture, retention, innovation, and society at large. For 20 years, she has been guiding companies through compensation audits designed to drive equity in pay. And her work is helping to close the wage gap one company at a time. Allison Wyatt is co-founder and managing partner of Agility Consulting, a compensation and talent management firm that partners with clients to build intentional equity. I love that, intentional equity. Allison is passionate about building equitable talent practices in organizations who are committed to achieving exceptional results. We were so excited to have her partner, Christina Greenberg, on last season, and we'll lift that episode right back up in the show notes so you can find it. And I'm so glad to have Allison with us today. Allison, thanks for being with us on the Mission Forward podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm pleased to be here.
Me too. So we're going to start with a story. I am hoping that you can tell me a little bit more beyond that brief bio I shared, which is very impressive, about you and what drives you to do this work that you do.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it really goes back all the way to my childhood. Really from an early age, I grew up in a very rural community in an economically depressed town. And there were just very limited opportunities for the kids in that community that I was growing up with, for the adults in that community. And when I was entering the ninth grade, I received a scholarship to attend a local private school. So ended up kind of in this completely different universe, right? In this completely different reality. And it was really the first time I saw firsthand how big the opportunity gap really is in the U.S. because I was witnessing the opportunities that I and my peers in this new school that I was going to had available to us. And then going home on the weekends and during the summers and seeing kind of the stark difference that were available to the opportunities that the kids I'd grown up with. And I just, this was like my awakening to social justice and inequity. So, you know, I went on to college, you know, as we all do, accumulated lots of college debt, went to work in the private sector to pay some of that off, and ended up working for a subsidiary of Time Warner doing recruiting, compensation, and talent strategy work while I sort of chipped away at my college debt. And I really fell in love with talent work as a lever for organizational impact. But for me, I wanted to do that work in a sector that I believed could help really solve America's opportunity gap crisis. And obviously, based on my personal story, that for me, that was education. You know, I thought that was the silver bullet. If we could solve that, we could solve everything. You know, now a quarter of a century later, I realize that the challenges we face as a nation are far more complex than that. But that was really how I started my career in social justice work. It was my entree into the space. And I've been doing it ever since. And I will say that, you know, from that moment on, I've been working with organizations whose entire missions revolve around social justice and impact. And, you know, these organizations struggle with these issues just like anyone else. And my belief is just if we can't figure out how to get it right in this space, like how can we figure out how to get it right everywhere else? And so my personal mission in life is to do work that will help this sector become the model. So, you know, I really when we founded Agility 8 years ago, really focused on diversifying the leadership bench in the social impact space and closing those wage and opportunity gaps. Shortly thereafter, I spearheaded and launched our compensation practice and really, really just honored to be able to see the impact of that work every day.
Wow, that's incredible. And Allison, this work, I know a lot about you, but I didn't realize how deep it is in your bones. You know, it is truly, when I said firsthand, you know it firsthand. Thank you for sharing that story and bringing us along with you.
Of course.
That is a really good reason why I wanted you to be on the show this season. I mentioned this last time when I talked with Christina, but I talk a lot on the show about the power of values in action. And for those listening, Agility Consulting is a perfect example of what it looks like to have a leadership team that puts their values into action in everything that they do. So if you haven't heard about them, check them out, because I really do appreciate their approach to the work and how intentionally connected they are to the work. You also do a lot of your work in higher ed, right? In the education sector. And so I know we're talking broadly today, but is that correct that you are really thinking about how to close this wage gap in higher ed too?
So absolutely, we have, you know, certainly a footprint in that space. But honestly, our consulting practice works across the entire social impact field. We work with organizations like the United Way, Planned Parenthood, Teach for America. It really spans the entire sector. So it is definitely a big part of the work that we do, but it's also a lot broader than that as well.
All right, that's good to know. Good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, as noted in the intro, today we are talking about closing the wage gap. And your firm has a really clear point of view on this. And I'm going to just read some of your words back to you. Here's what I heard recently. The default approach to compensating talent isn't equitable. So we can't use the old rules and systems and expect different results. How true is that? I'll be the first to agree that the old ways of doing business aren't always the best ways of doing business. So I would love you, Allison, to tell me how does your way of doing business change that game?
Yeah, and I think that this was the lens through which our compensation practice was designed. It was, how do we disrupt the status quo? And there's a couple of things that we've realized make a difference when it comes to building equitable comp programs and closing those gaps. The first is really engaging the whole organization in the design process. You know, too often decisions about pay are made by a few senior leaders at the top. And we believe that in order to really build equitable programs, and by the way, not only equitable programs, but programs that map to what your employees value and will land well and be bought in around. But, you know, since we're talking about equity, we believe you have to really engage everyone. So we do surveys, we do focus groups, we even facilitate philosophy design sessions with diverse cross-sections of organizations that engage staff at all levels and from all backgrounds. And, you know, again, this is not only more equitable and inclusive, but it does help to build buy-in and just ensure a smoother implementation process when you get to the very end.
When you're talking about compensation, I imagine you're talking about total compensation. You're asking about benefits. You're asking about experience. You're not simply saying, what do you want to be made? What do you want to be making?
Correct. Yeah. No, we're asking about, honestly, when we're talking to staff, we're really trying to get even deeper than just the compensation and really understand, what do they value overall in this organization? How does compensation fit into that total picture? You know, what are the things that are working well in their organization when it comes to all of their talent management practices? One of the examples I love to use is, you know, we'll often have clients tell us, we really want to implement a merit pay compensation program. Okay, great. And then we go engage with staff and survey staff, and nobody has any faith in their performance management program at all. It sounds like it's very unclear. Nobody understands how ratings work. There's a lot of variance in how people are assessed. And so that's an opportunity for us to push pause and say, okay, before we build a compensation program on top of this system that isn't really working, let's pause and let's fix that problem. And then we can layer things on top of it. So it's really important for us to get a holistic vision of how all of these things are working together to make sure that at the end of the day, this program is going to have its intended impact.
I love that. All right. So number one, engage the whole organization.
Yeah. And I think the second thing is just transparency, you know, which is getting a lot of, you know, attention right now, because a lot of states are starting to require salary transparency across the US. But, you know, 10 years ago, this was pretty much not really talked about at all. Mm-hmm. And honestly, many organizations were almost terrified to take this leap. I remember a time when we would start talking to our clients about rolling out their salary ranges, and, you know, they were scared. Mm-hmm. And we've always encouraged our clients to be transparent about pay. And now, you know, it's not even an option in many states. So this is becoming more common practice. Now, I always believe that there's a good reason why organizations are scared, right? And so I used to joke with clients in that situation that that's a really good litmus test. Let's really investigate why, right? And I think a lot of times the predominant reasons that I would see is either they hadn't done their research and they just didn't know what the market was. And so they were nervous to go forward with ranges that weren't based on actual data, right? Mm-hmm. Or if they had, maybe they had questions still about how the program was going to work, and they didn't feel like they had fully wrapped their heads around it. Mm-hmm. And so they were nervous about being well prepared to address questions, right? Or they were concerned that they hadn't had time to train their managers and prepare them to address questions. These are all really viable reasons, right? And so our work at that point would be, okay, well, let's solve that problem. And once we solve that problem, then most organizations are actually quite happy to roll things out and be fully transparent. So, you know, I think that as more and more states are adopting these laws, and this is becoming more common practice, we're seeing organizations increasingly wanting to do this deep compensation work. So they have a clear rationale around their salary structure. They're confident in the efficacy of their ranges and how they're placing people on it. And they just know that when they roll it out, it's going to make sense to people and be credible.
So transparency is good for the employee and for the employer.
It is. It really is. It's good for everybody.
All right. You've got a number three for me or no?
I do. Okay. I do. You know, I think the other thing is you have to look beyond the market, right? Mm-hmm. You know, we know that there are wage gaps in the marketplace. And common practice in compensation when you're building salary ranges is to just go out, look at what the market rate is, and then replicate that internally. And so the problem with that is that you have roles in the marketplace that are overrepresented by marginalized identities and then undervalued in the marketplace. So if you take that approach and you just base your structure solely on market data, you're simply replicating and reinforcing those inequities. And so we really try to help our clients consider other options, like cost of living wage floors as opposed to cost of labor. And that is typically going to raise the basement of your compensation program and help to close those gaps. Now, I'm very passionate about this approach because I know that this is not only good internally for the staff at the current organization I'm working with, but it's also going to put pressure in the marketplace, mm-hmm. because now that organization is a data point that is going mm-hmm. to bring those benchmark values up for those individuals in those roles across the entire market. So it not only has a positive impact internally, it actually has a systemic impact for change across society. If enough organizations start to do things like that, we can actually literally shift the market. And then I think the last thing is, you know, you don't you can't correct problems you don't know exist, right? And so it's really important for organizations to do a wage gap analysis every year. It should be part of salary planning. It's, you know, it honestly, it should be something you look at every single year, anytime you are, you know, making decisions about compensation. And so we do that in our work with clients to make sure the program that we're developing for them and the recommendations that we're giving to them are going to close any existing wage gaps.
I'm going to repeat these four because I love how you've just organized that. In compensation, engage the whole organization. Transparency is good for the employee and the employer, good for everyone. Look beyond your market and you can shift the market. We're going to come back to that one in a minute. And then you can't correct a problem that you can't see, right?
Exactly.
We are what we measure, and understanding how we measure that once a year, it sounds like is a good process there.
Yeah.
I want to dig into number three because it's so relevant to this time that we're in. As I noted at the top, we are recording this in March, just days after Equal Pay Day, the date that symbolizes how far into the year women must work to earn what men worked in the previous year, right? Because women earn less on average than men, they must work longer for the same amount of pay. The important part, though, is the wage gap is even greater for women of color. And to reinforce that point, Black Women's Equal Pay Day is scheduled to take place this year on July 9th. Holy moly. Mm-hmm. Right. So we've come so far, Allison, and we still have so far to go. So absolutely. I'm curious to get your take on that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, these wage gaps have been persistent for decades and they continue to be very persistent. And I think that, you know, a lot of what's behind that is what we just talked about, right? Mm-hmm. We've been using the exact same systems and methodology to do compensation work for ever. Mm-hmm. And so when you sort of do the same things over and over again in the same way, it becomes an echo chamber. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that's what we're seeing here. I will say that, you know, we at Agility have been really focused on this work since we launched our compensation practice. But it's not something that we necessarily noticed the mainstream bigger firms focusing on. And that really all changed about 4 years ago. And you do see these practices that I'm talking about becoming more and more common practice. And I will say from where I sit, I think the reason for that is because employees started to demand better and really put pressure on their employers to look at this. And it worked. The market listened. And so I just would encourage people to recognize, you know, the power that employees have, particularly in this labor market where there's been such a labor shortage in right. multiple areas. So I noticed a stark change 4 years ago as somebody who's been doing this work for a decade and promoting this work through Agility for a decade and longer before that. There was a tide change.
So I've got to ask the burning question, and I previewed this one before we started, but there are many nonprofit leaders who are listening to the show who are thinking this is all fine and good. We know that this is what we need to do. We totally hear the strategy and follow it. But how do we do it? If we know that there's limited resources to distribute, how do we start? Where do we start? Is this even possible for us to consider?
Yeah, I think that it's such a great question because, you know, I think that it's hard. You know, I have a lot of empathy for the organizations that we're working with. They're resource constrained. Their values are in the right place. They don't probably have in-house compensation experts. And, you know, I always like to joke that very few people study compensation design as a hobby on the side, right? So it's not something that where there's common knowledge around. And I think that really makes it difficult to just know, how do I chip away at this as an organization? So, you know, I think that if I were to sort of think about, you know, what I can do as an organization to get started, I start where Agility starts. Listen to your employees and find out what is really important to them. And sometimes, and honestly, I will tell you most often, it's not even about the amount of money people are earning so much as it is about transparency and clarity. People really understanding how decisions are made, people understanding How, you know, their compensation, what they can do to impact their compensation. You know, knowledge is power. So giving people knowledge is free. You can do that for free, right?
Right.
That would be the first thing, is just, you know, listening and then being really clear. And I think that there's kind of this, like, would you tell your mother litmus test? Like, if there's anything that you don't feel being clear about, then that's a, you put that on your list of issues you need to solve. And you just chip away at those things one at a time. So if there's, you know, oh, we have a bonus program, but we don't really know how we make decisions about bonuses. So how can we clarify that for staff? That's really, really helpful data to have, right? Now you know as an organization that that's a question you need to answer. And so I think that's the biggest thing, is just, you know, listening and then starting to get clarity on how you're going to make these decisions, so that you can then ensure you're going to be consistent in how these decisions are applied, because that's part of equity too, right? Your compensation at an organization should not depend on, you know, who you work for, or, you know, whether or not you have exposure to a given individual, right? Consistency is really, really important. I think the only other thing I would say is that it's not that expensive to do a study and figure out how you compare to the market, and to look internally at, you know, your wage gap. And I think, like I said, you can't fix something that you don't know exists. So I would encourage organizations to look at whatever data you can, or, you know, get some help, and, you know, get an organization to help you actually know where you even are at as a starting point.
Great advice. So I want to dig one step deeper than that on the practical nature of what it looks like. And what I'm hearing you really talk about that I appreciate is that this is a long game strategy and long game on two levels, right? One, it really sets your organization up for long-term sustainability. You're thinking long-term about your own company's future, but it's also not an overnight adjustment to say, we're going to adjust our salaries and our compensation package in the next 3 months. This is a longer game approach. So I'm curious, when you are engaging with organizations, obviously there's a really important research phase, that learning phase, but what does it typically look like for an organization who maybe says, okay, maybe this is something I need to do from beginning to end? What does that process look like?
I mean, I think that oftentimes perfection is the enemy of progress. So you really can't expect perfection overnight. And oftentimes we're working with our clients on a sequenced approach, right? I'm going to get better and better at this over time. And that's okay, right? That we're on this journey, and that's okay. So I think that, you know, you start with that mindset of, let me understand where I'm at and how I make progress. You know, I think of an example of a client that wants to implement a cost of living wage floor, like I mentioned earlier, which, you know, you hear me talk about it and it sounds like a wonderful thing, right? Why doesn't everybody do this, right? You know, well, imagine an organization that in doing that would create this completely financially unsustainable model and have to, you know, lay off 20% of their staff,
Right,
right?
right.
I mean, ultimately, that's not good for anyone, right? And so you have to kind of realize that these issues are complicated. And part of what you have to do is really think through the consequences and the trade-offs, and then build a plan out for several years that allows you to continue to make progress toward that final destination without putting your organization in jeopardy, because you're always trying to balance internal equity, external competitiveness, and financial sustainability. You know, and those three things can often work at odds with each other, because, you know, even if some, I'll have clients say, like, well, I want to value these two jobs in the same way, but the market values this job so much more highly. How would I ever be able to find people and fill that position, right? And so there are a lot of pressures on organizations that, you know, have gotten us to where we are today. And those are systemic, and those are really difficult to work against, but there are ways to do it. And it happens one step at a time.
So I'm going to invite our listeners to ask themselves a question that I love and I ask a lot on this podcast, which is what if? What if you suspend disbelief for a moment and consider entering into a compensation audit or exploration to see what it would look like for you to reimagine how you pay, how you compensate, how you engage your employees in that process? What could the future of your organization look like? What could potentially be holding you back now that a process like this might actually unleash, right? In the power that you have to move that mission forward. So, Allison, you have given us so much to think about today.
Yeah.
I've got one last question for you, but let me ask you first. Is there anything that we haven't touched on before I go to that last question?
So I think the one thing that I also want to raise is that, I mean, as you said, right, we're on the heels of Equal Pay Day, you know, and we see how much further we still have to go. And I think one thing I do have to say is it's not just about compensation, right? You know, I think that we do have to acknowledge that there are other factors, you know, statistically speaking, we see women stepping back and taking on more demands on the home front, which just impedes their ability to advance their career at the same rate as men. We have not built work cultures that are, you know, that allow women to have these sort of systems and flexibility and support that they need to not have that be a barrier. So, you know, and then you layer on top of that biases and stereotypes that barricade opportunities for advancement for people. So I just want to emphasize that pay is certainly part of the puzzle, but honestly, in a way, it's kind of the end result of an inequitable society. Mm-hmm. And if we really, really want to make long-term sustaining progress, then we have to focus on those things as well. And I think in many ways, the pay will follow if we do that. So
the great insight and reminder. So here's that last question.
Yeah.
So for folks who are listening who plan to hire this year, what advice would you give them on how to make the most of that growth opportunity?
I am, as I said, I am a recruiter and a compensation expert. So I have to answer that question from
both.
Okay,
I'll take it.
I can't help myself. So first, thinking about the compensation lens, I would say do your research. Do not guess. Make sure that you've done your research so that when you go forward to make an offer, you can make a really fair offer. And then also make sure that you're also thinking about the folks you already have on the bus, and then that you're not making an offer that's going to set things internally out of whack with your existing staff, because that it's A, not fair, and B, everybody will find out and you will completely lose credibility in your compensation program. And then you'll be hiring a firm like Agility to fix the problem. And by then it's really hard because you've painted yourself into some corners, although you can do it. And there's ways to get out of those corners. So I think just remember that keeping the amazing talent that you have is just as important as finding new people. And on that lens, I'll transition now to how to find great people. I think the biggest thing, if you want to build a really amazing, diverse team, you have to be a proactive recruiter. You know, I think that you can't just accept the candidate pool that happens to apply. You have to go and research people and reach out. Recruiting is sales. So you have to get out there and you have to really be willing to talk about why your organization is an attractive option for staff from all backgrounds. There is incredible talent out in the world that comes from all different backgrounds. And, you know, your job as a recruiter is to kind of get out there and promote that, your values and that message, so that you can tap into those pools.
Allison, this was such a great conversation. I learned so much from you. I've got all of your tips written down here so I can go back and think about how we make sure we're implementing everything we can here at Mission Partners, but also so that our clients and our friends who are listening, that they can think about and turn to you when they hit those fork in the road moments. So thanks for being with us, Allison.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
And that brings us to the end of this episode of the Mission Forward podcast. You know, as mission-driven leaders, we know our people are our greatest asset. Certainly, we know that at Mission Partners, and we can't move our mission forward without people. Agility Consulting, I have had a chance to get to know them over the course of the past year, and I'm so glad we had time with Allison today They are a compass for building equitable organizations where people thrive. Their talent management experts empower you to break free from traditional hiring, compensation, and talent management norms that perpetuate inequality and prevent you from hiring and retaining great people. So put your values to work. Act on equity. Visit agilityconsulting.com to talk to one of their consultants about upgrading your talent system. Attract and retain top talent and ensure equity at your organization today. Thanks for listening, my friends. Look forward to seeing you next time on the Mission Forward podcast.